This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
We are? We're on the internet? Wait. Seriously? We're doing an experiment, so this might sound a little awkward in the beginning. So I'm waiting for confirmation from satellite headquarters, which is my wife, to let me know if I'm on the internet right now. Am I? I am? This is all happening right now. Okay, not awkward at all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Qala rabbi sijnu ahabbu ilayya mimma yad'unani ilayhi. Wa illa tasrif anni kaydahunna asbu ilayhinna wa akum minal jahileen. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى اله وصحبه اجمعين اما بعد. Once again everyone, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Today I try to cover ayah number 33 of Surah Yusuf. We are at the point where the wife of the minister has shown her true colors. She's also got all these women ganged up around herself now. They're all in on it together at this point because it's in their best interest to really support each other now. Because of the political web that's been cast. And Yusuf alayhi salam is caught in the middle of this trap between him and all of those women. And at this point she gets emboldened and tells him, he better do whatever I tell him to do, otherwise he's going to jail. It's also important to note before I carry on, that at this point it's not just him dealing with one person who's gone crazy, he's dealing with an entire group of people now. And this, you know, Haytalak was more a suggestion, which is even I'm ready for you or come here. But now she's being authoritative and demanding. So she's going to use her influence and her power, maybe even her other slaves, to force him and to impose something on him that he doesn't want. And that's why when she says he's going to get thrown into jail, she'll have other guards come and cast him away. So he's now in physical danger too. So this has extremely intensified, and there's no... What's remarkable also that I didn't mention, Valerie pointed it out, it's correct, is you've got this environment where there's all these women and there's this, the leader of the head of the house or this woman, and they're all saying this crazy stuff, and not one of them has the voice of reason to say, wait, this is wrong, we shouldn't be doing this, or that we should treat this person with some respect, or nobody had the voice of reason. And why did that happen? You know, in psychology, sometimes you study the reason for which someone would remain silent during, something. It could be that somebody doesn't agree with what's going on. It's possible. We don't know that. We just know that they all schemed and whatever. But actually, what Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam tells us in a famous hadith, if you see an evil, you should change it with your hand. And if you can't, with your tongue. And if at the very least you can't, at least despise it inside of your heart, right? But here's the situation where just despising it in your heart isn't enough because your life isn't in danger. These are influential women. And in that sense, they become complicit with what's going on. Actually, it's a more similar case than that hadith to what Allah describes in Surah At-Tawbah. In Surah At-Tawbah, Allah describes that when the Prophet ﷺ was taking the drafted Muslim military for the expedition towards Tabuk, which was actually a draft. So it wasn't a voluntary military. Everybody had to go. And if you're not going to be joining the military, you had to present your reasons for not being able to go. Okay? Everything okay? Volume is low? Okay. All right. We'll work on the volume before I carry on. You got it? Okay. So because it was a draft military operation, it wasn't voluntary, even the hypocrites were forced into joining. So when they joined the military, they're more a liability than an asset because these are soldiers that don't want to be on the battlefield. So even as you're traveling through in caravans towards the military objective, they take their horses and they go back and forth, and they try to spread rumors and create dissent and lower the morale of the military. What are we doing here? It was crop season. I don't know why we're all the way out here. And there are people that are... There are some people that put a stop to it as soon as they open their mouth, right? You can't be doing this. You open your mouth again, we're going to see what happens, right? Because in the military, you can't be creating that kind of dissent. That's tantamount to treason. But some of them, Allah describes, وَفِيكُمْ سَمَّعُونَ لَهُمْ وَاللَّهُ عَلِيمٌ بِالظَّالِمِينَ. Among you are those who actually do listen to them. And Allah knows all the wrongdoers. Who was the wrongdoer now? The wrongdoers were they who went around trying to spread something bad, and the wrongdoers were the ones that were listening complicitly. So the Quran also illustrates that when you have a social setting and something wrong is happening and you have the power to change it and you stay quiet anyway, then you become part of the problem. Then, you know, remaining silent in such a situation does not absolve you. Well, at least I didn't want to be a part of it. That's not good enough because you had the power to say something, right? So that's a misuse of the famous hadith where at least you should feel bad about it in your heart. The people who should feel bad about it in their heart are those who have no other recourse. They can get killed for opening their mouth or whatever it may be, you know? And so at the very least, they still have the faith that, you know, if they don't want to be courageous enough to speak up, which is actually the fundamental of our deen, وَتَوَاصَوْ بِالْحَقِّ, they counsel each other to the truth, لَا نَخَافُ فِي اللَّهِ لَوْمَةَ لَائِمٍ, we're not going to be afraid to say the criticism of any criticizer, we're not going to be afraid of it if we are convinced that we're speaking the truth. We're going to أَنَّقُولَ الْحَقَّ أَيْنَمَا كُنَّا, that's a pledge people took to the Prophet ﷺ, we'll speak the truth wherever we may be, in whatever circumstance we find ourselves in. It won't be part of our equation who's not going to like it. لَا نَخَافُ فِي اللَّهِ لَوْمَةَ لَائِمٍ. It's because we're speaking for the sake of Allah, then whoever doesn't like it, they don't have to like it. We're not going to take that into consideration when we open our mouth. Okay, so that's actually the principle. Now, coming back to this, there are, you know, this entire group, nobody speaks the truth, and Yusuf alayhi salam doesn't have a human support with him saying, hold on strong. The fatherly figure Yaqub alayhi salam isn't there. You saw some people making tafsir in the previous scene when she was alone with him that he saw an image of his father. Even if you accept that interpretation, none of that's here now. And this situation is exponentially worse because there's far more pressure on him now. And yet, he is just by himself. And this is Allah Azza wa Jal describing the intensity of the situation for this remarkable human being, that you've got not just one individual putting him in fitna, an entire society ganged up against him. He's got no way out of it. And there he stands just alone with his faith. That's all he has, is his iman in Allah. That's all, the only, you know, one he can turn to. Which is why when she makes this threat to him, the incredible thing is he doesn't respond to her. He has an immediate conversation with Allah. That's the first incredible thing to notice in ayah number 33. She's just made his threat. إِلَّمْ يَفْعَلْ مَا أَمُرُهُ لَيُسْجَنَنَّ, you know, وَيَكُونَ مِنَ الصَّاغِرِينَ, if he doesn't do whatever I tell him to do, he's going to get thrown into jail. Or absolutely he will be from those that get humiliated. And at this point he should be responding to this threat, but instead again he ignores her completely and he turns to Allah and speaks to Allah directly. Now my personal inclination, I was discussing this with Sheikh Suhaib the other day about this ayah. It can be argued that he said this out loud, the words that he's about to say, that he said them out loud, or قَالَ فِي نَفْسِهِ, that he said this inside of himself. Like this is like a dua. When we make a dua to Allah, sometimes we can't hear it, but we're making a dua, yeah? That's us still speaking. The heart can speak too, not just the tongue that speaks, the heart can speak too, right? So the word qala can be used for speaking within yourself, or speaking, having a conversation within yourself without verbalizing it out loud. Now, it could be that he also said this out loud. It may be the case too. Now, at the very least, if I were to mix and match, my personal inclination is he said this to himself, that he didn't even consider them worthy of conversation. If I consider that there's a possibility that he spoke this in front of all of them, I would argue that that would have been a part of it, not all of it. What part of it? As-sijnu ahabbu ilayya mimma yad'unani ilayhi. That part. Meaning, the famous words, prison is more beloved to me than what they're calling me to. Right? That part, he clearly may have said out loud. But he didn't talk to them, he talked to who? Allah. My master, prison, the jail is better for me, is more beloved to me than whatever they're calling me to. We're going to dig into that phrase a little bit, inshallah, in a second. But then the next part, وَإِلَّا تَصْرِفْ عَنِّي كَيْدَهُنَّ أَصْبُ إِلَيْهِنَّ, and if you don't steer their scheme away from me, then I might incline towards them. And I might become those who don't have control over their feelings. I might become those who act in, you know, indecent ways, al-jahileen, in inappropriate ways. That part is his own vulnerability, and he's not going to give the enemy that. That I might give in to you if Allah doesn't steer me away. So I'm more inclined to think that latter part, if not all of it, is something he says only to Allah Azza wa Jalla. That he doesn't say this out loud. إِلَّا تَصْرِفْ عَنِّي كَيْدَهُنَّ أَصْبُوا إِلَيْهِنَّ وَأَكُمْ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ. If he did say it towards them, then it can be considered that he's putting them down and saying, you're being jahileen, and I'll be among you. You're being ignorant, you're being the ones who don't control your emotions, and I would be among you. There has to be something that has to be addressed about this ayah. I am not interested in, inclining towards more novel or more unique interpretations of the Quran against what traditionally has been said about the word of Allah. In fact, most of the time, I like to be on the side of what is being said traditionally, even if I would say that view can be looked at in a more nuanced way, but not going against what's been said already. But in this particular case, I've had a problem for many, many, many years, and I'll share that problem with you. I'll be open and transparent with you about it. And at the end of this discussion, again, I'm not presenting to you that I have the right understanding of this, but I'm presenting to you what I find the most convincing, and you're welcome to do your own studies and research. And inshallah, in the comments section, Sheikh Suhaib, he and I spoke, and those of you that have questions about it, he can certainly address them there too, because he and I had a discussion about this also. It's very famously said about this ayah, because he said, prison is more beloved to me than what they're calling me to, that Yusuf alayhi salam, ma'adallah, made a mistake, that he should have, if he had said, Ya Allah, protect me, or give me your security is more beloved to me than what they're calling to, then Allah would not have allowed him to be thrown in prison, that the fact that he said, prison is better for me, is the reason Allah put him in prison. He could have chosen better words, right? And this is sort of become the standard staple interpretation of this ayah. This is an example of you should ask for the best things, and if you should be careful what you ask for, because then you'll get it, etc., etc. Right? So I'm going to tell you why there's a layers by for which I could not, for a very long time, I didn't open my mouth about it, but I could not accept that interpretation of this ayah. Let's first talk about the authenticity of that famous interpretation that everybody quotes. Everybody cites that Yusuf alayhi salam asked for jail, he should have asked for something better, etc. Right? Al-Qurtubi rahimahullah, who's clearly famous for citing sources of what's been said in the early generations, right? And many attribute this to be an athar, meaning something attributed to the Sahaba, that one of the Sahaba mentioned this phrase. Here's how the phrase goes in the wording of Al-Qurtubi rahimahullah. This is taken from Al-Qurtubi's tafsir. Wa hukiya, and it has been said, and it's been circulated, and huki also means the story has been told from hikaya. The story's been told. Anna Yusuf alayhi salam, that Yusuf alayhi salam, lamma qala sijnu ahabbu ilayya, when he said that prison is more beloved to me, awhallahu ilayhi, Allah revealed something to him. At that moment, Allah revealed something to him. Ya Yusuf, anta habasta nafsak. You put yourself, you encaged yourself. Allah revealed to him, Yusuf, you just encaged yourself. حَيْثُ قُلْتَ أَسْجْنُ أَحَبُّ إِلَيَّ when you said, prison is more beloved to me. وَلَوْ قُلْتَ الْعَافِيَ أَحَبُّ إِلَيَّ and had you said protection or Allah's security or Allah's relief is more beloved to me, لَعُوفِيتَ you would have been given security and relief. So the fact that you, so this is what's narrated in Al-Qurtubi. Now here's the issue. The first thing is Imam Al-Qurtubi rahimahullah, when he cites something, then he gives you where he got it from. And if he's talking about a riwayah of some kind, you will typically find ruwiya or yurwa. It's been narrated. And you, those of you that are familiar with Islamic discourse, we talk a lot about narrations, right? So even his use of the word hukiya is obscure. Like, it has been said. It's been circulated. The story has been told. And he doesn't attribute it to anybody. It doesn't go back to some authentic source. Now here's there's a second problem. It can be that something is mentioned in tafsir and we don't find an exact trace for where it came from, and we can still maybe accept it. That happens, and I don't find an intellectual problem with doing so in our tradition if it doesn't raise an issue. But this raises an issue for me, at least, on a number of levels. The first level is, this is claiming that Allah revealed something. Right? Allah revealed something to Yusuf alayhi salam. And Allah said to Yusuf alayhi salam, you said this word, had you said that word, it would have been better. And you would have been given relief. So now we're attributing revelation that came from Allah in a quote. It's not a sahabi said to another sahabi. Or this happened in this, human interaction. This is interaction between Allah and a prophet. And if we don't have the highest authentication of any interaction between Allah and the prophet, that to me is not something you can take as a basis to judge issues, because that should require the highest level of authenticity, Quran itself being the ultimate case of that, right? Allah directly speaking to His Prophet, and Allah validating that this is directly the speech of, you know, Allah to him through the angel Jibreel over and over again in the Quran. So authenticity when it comes to attributing something to Allah is of the highest importance in our religion, right? So there can be other narrations that talk about other things where you can take a more lax approach. It's possible. You know, maybe there's some fawa'id and things like that. But here, I have an issue with it. I personally do. That's the first reason. The second reason I have an issue with it is, what did Allah say about Yusuf alayhi salam? Please pay attention to this carefully. That Allah will teach him the interpretation of what lies behind speech, yes? So people are going to say something on the surface, but Allah knows what is behind it. Now, as far as I can tell, Allahu ta'ala alam, my reading of this ayah is one of the most amazing things that have ever been said by a prophet. The words prison is more beloved to me than what they call me to is one of the most incredible words a prophet has said in the Quran. This is a young man, unmarried, surrounded by women that are throwing themselves at him. And now, on the one hand, you've got the urges that a man would have inside of him, that Allah created us with. زُيِّنَ لِلنَّاسِ حُبُّ الشَّهَوَاتِ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ. Allah put that inside a man. That's not something that men created for themselves. It was put inside of them. It was installed inside of them. There's a reason Allah mentions those rewards of, you know, of the spouse in Jannah, because that's a motivation for a man. That's something that, you know, a man looks forward to. This is why, you know, marriage is so important. Anyhow, so that's already there. The element is already there inside of him. And he wants to hold on to Allah and, you know, seek the protection of Allah. The other remarkable thing about that is he's surrounded by all of this. And before, when she was calling him, he said, I'm going to cling on to Allah, right? I'm going to hold on to Allah. And he could have just said, I want Allah's protection. But before he turns to Allah and says, Ya Allah, I want your protection, he tells him something else about himself between him and Allah. He tells him, it seems like I'm down to two options here. She's taken an oath over and over. He's going to jail, he's going to jail, he's going to jail. La yusjananna. And then she's added an additional explanation of what's going to happen in jail. وَلَا يَكُونَمْ مِنَ الصَّاغِرِينَ. He'll absolutely be from those humiliated. As if she talked about jail four times over. That's what she's, or five times over. That's what she's done. So the jail thing is now guaranteed. It's in his face. And prophets deal with reality in front of them. This is what's happening. You see, Musa alayhi salam, when he knows Allah revealed to him that the Pharaoh is coming for you, right? So he's going to take the Israelites and go into the desert. It's impossible as that seems. He's not going to stay inside his homes and say, Allah will deal with them here. You have to take whatever steps. But that's in taking into account reality in front of you. The reality in front of Musa alayhi salam right now is the female Pharaoh and her cronies have ganged up. And he's now put in a corner. So he's got only two choices. He's got the choice of, you know, in the worldly sense, either he's going to tell her, if that's the case, prison it is. Because you can't imagine him saying anything else to her, right? Because if she says, he doesn't know what I say, he's going to go to jail, any believer in that place, especially a prophet, would say what then? Then go ahead. In kana lakum kaidun fakidun. That's what prophets say. If you have a scheme to make, go ahead and make it. I'm not backing up. I'm not backing down. I'll take prison. But he doesn't tell her that. He tells who that? He tells Allah that. And he didn't just say, if prison it is, then I'll take it. He said the most incredible words. He said, prison is more beloved to me. He didn't say, well, prison it is then. Or I choose prison. He said, ahabbu, more beloved. Prison and something more beloved don't go together. I would love prison way more. Love is an act of, you know, surrender to somebody. You surrender a part of yourself to somebody. And that's part of what love is. He's telling Allah Azza wa Jalla in the most beautiful words that if obeying you means I have to go to jail, I would love jail. If disobeying you means I have to, you know, if staying safe means I have to disobey you, then I would hate to be safe. I would love jail if it means I'm still with my Rabb. That's why the words Rabbi in the beginning are so important. He didn't just say, As-sijnu ahabbu ilayya. But, you know, a prison is more beloved to me. My master prison at this point, because it will keep me away from them, because it will keep me in your obedience as more beloved to me. If those are the only two options I have, Ya Allah, then gladly I will take prison without hesitation. These are the most remarkable words of loyalty to Allah. And what they teach us is a timeless lesson. It's so timeless that sometimes obeying Allah will put you on the path to pain. Obeying Allah, as opposed to disobeying Allah, you can keep status quo. You can actually feel good in some ways. You can stay happy if you want. Everybody around you will be happy. Nobody's going to get upset. Things are not going to get rocked upside down. You know, you can just live your life and just put that little part of your conscience that's poking you that this is wrong. You can put that to sleep and everything will be okay. But if you do the right thing and you stand up for the right thing, then man, your life will look like you're being thrown into a jail. Everybody will outcast you. Anybody who liked you will hate you. You're going to feel humiliated. You're going to feel like you don't belong anymore. All because you decided to do the right thing. And if it comes to that, then we have to be like Yusuf alayhi salam, our hero in this case, who turns to Allah and says, "My master, if loving you means, if being loyal to you means that I have to go to jail, then I would love to go to jail." This is actually loyalty at its peak. It's so beautiful, those words. He didn't just say, "Well, if I have no choice, I guess I'll go. And Ya Allah protect me in jail." No, he said, "It's as-sijnu ahabbu ilayya." And you know, the other problem with the narration, I was telling Sheikh Suhaib, as far as the eloquence of the narration, Allah says to him, "Well, you put yourself in trouble by saying prison is more beloved to you." Yeah? Allah Azza wa Jal doesn't know what's in the heart of Yusuf alayhi salam. Isn't Yusuf alayhi salam the one who just before said, "Innahu Rabbi ahsana mathwaya," not too long ago, he said, "My master has provided me with the best possible housing"? Isn't he the one who talked about the best possible housing? All of a sudden he forgets that Allah provides the best housing and says, "I'd go to jail"? Allah doesn't know what's behind his words more than anyone else. Allah won't give him the benefit. Well, we give benefit of the doubt. No, what he means by this is the love he has for Allah, the loyalty he has to Allah. But more than us, Allah knows the depths of his heart, does he not? And as opposed to that, when a man in this situation said, "Ya Rab, for you, prison is more beloved. My master, prison is more beloved to me than what they're calling me to." And Allah would say, "You know what? You should have said this instead." I have a hard time attributing that to Allah, because that sounds like a gotcha moment. You know, if you said this, it would have... Now that you said jail, I'm going to put you in jail. That's not the Rabb we get introduced to in the Quran. We believe in a Rabb. What happens in the famous hadith of the Prophet ﷺ where a man is out in the desert in the middle of nowhere and his camel gets lost? And when his camel gets lost, he's in a state of hysteria. And in a state of hysteria, when he finally finds his camel, he turns to Allah and says, "I'm your master and you're my slave." Oh, like he flipped it, right? So, "Anta abdi wa ana rabbuk." You're my slave and I'm your master. And Allah Azza wa Jal did not punish him for it because he's in that state and he's excited. And now we're saying, Yusuf alayhi salam, in this extreme state, actually says the right thing, and Allah Azza wa Jal would say to him, "You could have said this better, therefore you go to jail." I can't accept it. I don't accept it. What I do accept here is, actually, even in the next ayah, Allah Azza wa Jal, so beautifully, Allah didn't say sahahahu, he says fastajaba lahu rabbuhu. Just that phrase. I'm not doing the next ayah today, but just to give you the idea of why I find this so convincing, not accepting this version so convincing. Allah says, then his master responded to him. His nurturing master responded to him. These words, فَاسْتَجَابَ لَهُ رَبُّهُ, study them in the Quran. فَاسْتَجَابَ لَهُ رَبُّهُ أَنِّي لَا أُضِيعُ عَمَلَ عَامِلٍ مِّنْكُمْ مِّنْ ذَكَرِنَ وَأُنْثَى بَعْضُكُمْ مِّنْ بَعْضٍ. Your master responded to them, "I will not waste the good deeds of any one of you that do any good deeds." Allah does not see his intention. Allah does not see the fitna he's put in. Allah Azza wa Jal does not see the sacrifice he's made. Allah does not see that he's willing to put himself in harm's way just to obey Allah Azza wa Jal. He doesn't see any of that, you know. And so the word you used could have been better. That's why I don't, you know, with all due respect, maybe there is a authenticity to it that I'm not aware of. I couldn't find it, and Sheikh Suhaib couldn't find it. But if there is one, then, you know, I stand to be corrected. But as far as I can tell, this goes against the spirit of what we learn about Allah Azza wa Jal and what we learn about the Prophet Alayhi Wasallam, especially this remarkable Prophet that an entire surah is dedicated to, you know. And it's as if we're telling about him that he has the talent of ta'wilul ahadith, right? He can interpret the best of speech, yeah? And he can figure out what's going on behind speech. And yet he's not capable of very good speech. How? And if I as a human mind can think of what's behind his speech, the beautiful intention behind his speech, Allah knows way better than any of us. أَأَنْتُمْ أَعْلَمُوا أَمِلَّهُ You know? So the ta'wil of his hadith is better known to Allah Azza wa Jal than any of us. May Allah Azza wa Jal forgive our mistakes and you know, allow us to understand his word in a way that pleases him. Anyhow, so that's the first thing that I wanted to bring to your attention. The second thing I wanted to bring to your attention is this phrase is now occurring for the second time. More beloved. If you remember, لَيُوسُفُ وَأَخُوهُ أَحَبُّ إِلَىٰ أَبِينَا مِنَّا Yusuf and his brother are more beloved to our father than we are. So the words more beloved came before, and now they're coming again, right? And it's an interesting, you know, recurrence. Because there, people decided to take action and go down an evil path because they were vying for the love of Allah's creation, right? And they were willing to take whatever actions, justifying it for themselves, because they were trying to win the love of their father. And here you have Yusuf alayhi salam, in his love of Allah and his love of loyalty to Allah, he would prefer to put himself in harm's way. You know, there they were putting him in a dark place. Here, he's ready to go to a dark place. He himself is ready to go to a dark place because of the love he has for Allah Azza wa Jal. May Allah give us that kind of love for him, which gives us the bravery to stand up to these impossible situations. Then comes the next, you know, challenge in this ayah. مِمَّا يَدْعُونَنِي إِلَيْهِ Master, prison is more beloved to me. I would love it more than what these women are calling me to. What these women, plural, yad'una. Yad'una is one of those strange verbs in Arabic, da'a yad'u, which is naqis at the end. It's naqis wawi. It's got a vowel at the end, which is a waw, which means the masculine conjugation is hum yad'una. And the feminine conjugation is hunna yad'una. So it's the same. Okay, this one is hunna yad'una. Those women call me to. Okay, so prison is better for me than what these women are calling me to. But the problem with that is in the previous ayah, the women weren't calling him to anything. In the previous ayah, it was one lady saying, if he doesn't do what I tell him to. It was just her. And now he's saying, what they're calling me to. There's a gap. And that gap can be filled, you know, اللبيب من الإشارات يفهمو. You know, an intelligent person can fill in the gaps, right? A smart person can take a hint. What's the hint? You remember she said, if he doesn't do whatever I tell him to, yeah? She's so vindictive, she says, what does she want from him? She can't get richer from him. She can't get him to love her. She can't get that. But you know what? He made her feel lesser. He made her feel little. And she wants to make sure he feels little. Now, there's only two avenues where she can make him feel little. One, she already said, if he doesn't do what I say, he'll be little when he's in jail. وَلَا يَكُونَ مِنَ الصَّاغِرِينَ What's the other way he can feel little? That precious chastity of his, that precious integrity of his, that he held on to and defied me, I'm going to rip that integrity to shreds. Ladies, have whatever fun you want with him. He's all yours. Whatever you want, it's okay. Enjoy yourselves. She says, oh, you want charity? You want chastity? You want to hold on to your dignity? I'll show you dignity. Here's what I do with your dignity. And he's basically, talk about the wolf will eat him. Now there's a pack of wolves, you know? Now there's a pack, and he's just been thrown in the middle of this crazy situation. Here he was bandaging some women about their injury, and then she made this monologue speech and said, ladies, you can have whatever fun you want. And he's in this crazy circumstance where there's security guards. If he stops and he doesn't indulge, they're going to, you know, grab him and take him away. And he's going to say this. And so he says, whatever these women are calling me to, he runs towards the guards, arrest me, take me away. مِمَّا يَدْعُونَنِي إِلَيْهِ From whatever they're calling me to. Now we get to one of the most beautiful, subtle, you know, wisdoms that I could think of inside of these ayat. That's the first thing he said. So he's preferring jail, fine. The second thing is In order to describe this to you, I hope I can do a good job because I really want you to take this one home and hold on to this lesson from the Quran. There is inside of us, we have appetites. We have appetite for food. We have appetite for beautiful clothing. We have appetite for good perfume and a nice house. We have sexual appetites. We have these appetites that Allah put inside of us. This is what human beings were created with. زُيِّنَ لِلنَّاسِ حُبُّ الشَّهَوَاتِ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ وَالْبَنِينَ وَالْقَنَاطِيرِ الْمُقَنطَرَةِ مِنَ الذَّهَبِ وَالْفِضَّةِ وَالْخَيْلِ الْمُسَوَّمَةِ وَالْأَنْعَامِ وَالْحَرْثِ. A beautiful ride, الْخَيْلِ الْمُسَوَّمَةِ, investments. These are appetites that human beings have. They have a hunger for them. They are intrigued by them. They have an allure towards them. And there's a list of them in the Quran. Fine. So there is something inside of us that is pulling us towards what gives us pleasure from this world. Yeah? There's something that's pulling us towards this world. And then there are, and that's already inside of us. It's like the explosive material, the dangerous, you know, fuel is already inside. The combustible fuel is already inside, ready to be set on fire. And then there's the devil, Shaitan, trying to set that stuff on fire. So now we've got the explosive material already inside, and then you've got Shaitan constantly trying to light it up. And then on top of all of that, you've got, and by the way, Shaitan's mentioned here or no? Inna Shaitana lil insan aduwwu mubin. Okay, so we've got two dangerous materials now. This is why Allah says, فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَى. The nafs has inside it explosively dangerous material. And taqwa also, it has both. Then on top of that, you've got a society or a friend or an owner, whoever, that is pulling you towards the wrong. So you already have a draw, because you're born with appetites. The devil wants you to use those urges for the wrong reason. And then you've got the human efforts, a person or society, pulling you also towards the wrong thing. Yeah. So you've got these three forces working against you, actually. Part of you is working against you too. The devil's definitely working against you. And then the devil gets successful in using other people to work against you also. Yeah. Now, Yusuf alayhi salam in scene one with this woman found himself, and what does he say? Ma'adallah. Ma'adallah. I'm going to cling on to Allah. Now I want you to imagine the imagery. Something's pulling you away and you're holding on. Right? You're holding on. So the gravitational force has not ended. The negative elements, the enemies within and without, haven't disappeared. They're still there. They're still tugging at you. You're not budging because you're what? Holding on. Yeah, that's the idea. So imagine you're tied to somebody. They're pulling at you, but you're holding on. Yeah? فَقَدْ اسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى. He's holding on to an anchor, not letting go. So the first time we found the imagery of him holding on, clinging on, was ma'adallah. That's number one. Then it came back again when she said فَاسْتَعْصَمَ, and he held on tight. So twice Allah mentions what? Holding on. Holding your ground. Now even if he's holding his ground, does it mean that the pull has gone away? No. So we've only discussed him holding on. Now comes the other part. The other part is, Ya Allah, I'm holding on as best I can, but can you change the pull a little bit? Can you get rid of the pull? Can you loosen these ties a little bit? Can you cut them for me? You understand? So twice in this story, Allah says, twice, holding on. Twice he says, وَكَذَلِكَ لِنَصْرِفَ عَنْهُ السُّوءَ وَالْفَحْشَاءَ. And now he's going to say, وَإِلَّا تَصْرِفْ عَنِّي كَيْدَهُنَّ. He says, Allah says, and that's so we can steer evil away from him. Steer the evil away from him. And here he's going to say, and if you don't steer their scheme away from me, if you don't steer, now, this is not about him holding on. This is about the ropes that are pulling, getting cut, and pulling on something else. Go away. Change the direction of this wind. Stop pushing me in this direction. You understand? Now, there's two parts. Holding on tight. Now, let's imagine that there's strong winds, and they're pulling you this way, and you're holding on to something, yeah? Like a hurricane or something like that, yeah? The part that's yours, where you're using your strength, is in holding on. And as you start getting weaker, or you say, Ya Allah, I'm only that strong, I can't hold on much longer, can you make the wind go away? That part's not up to you, that part is up to who? That part is up to Allah. So there's two things. There's you holding on. But if you show to Allah that you are holding on, Allah will change the direction of the wind. Allah will redirect. Allah will make the pull go away. Because Allah did not create human beings to be constantly be yanked in this way. After every difficulty comes what? Ease. And this lesson is so beautiful because it actually takes us back to so many places in the Quran. Like for example, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ and قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. There's evil on the outside and there's evil on the inside. You got to hold on and not let the evil on the inside get to you, and Allah will protect you from the evil from the outside. You come to the Fatiha, you tell Allah, إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ. We're going to worship you. We worship you means we're holding on to you. But we can't hold on to you, we're not strong enough, we need your help. Because there's things pulling us away from worshipping you. So we don't just say, إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ. What do we say? وَإِيَّاكَ نَسْتَعِينَ. We need your help. So turning their direction somewhere else, getting me away from them, getting them away from me rather, that's Allah's intervention. So there's two parts. To get away from evil, I have to first show Allah that I'm holding on as best I can. But I also have to admit that me holding on doesn't mean that I have angelic ability where I can constantly hold on and never be tempted and never let my grip loose. And I'm human. I'm human. And so what does he say? He says, first of all, he's already shown that he can hold on. And he is holding on. But he realizes, I'm human. I can't, if I'm holding on today, if I hold on tomorrow, if I hold on next week, I can't even guarantee about myself in 2 weeks from now. I don't know where I'm going to be a month from now. I can't be so overconfident about my iman that I'll just hold on and nothing will ever get to me. I can't do that to my, that's arrogance. That's self-righteousness. Ya Allah, here's the thing. He turns to Allah and says, prison is more beloved to me. What's he saying? I can't be here constantly being pulled. I've held on as much as I could. I don't think this is a situation I can be in anymore. I don't know how things are going to get much, much worse, and they're out of my control. You see, you have to understand the reality of the situation, and it's difficult. This is why I said don't bring kids into this conversation so early. He is a slave. He is a slave. He is living in slave quarters. There's no lock on his door. Where is he going to go to sleep? They can come at him anytime. They can do whatever. There's no way for him. Where is he going to go? Where is he going to go? So he now realizes this has gotten so out of hand that the only place left, if that's prison, then that's what it is. And now he turns to Allah and says this, وَإِلَّا تَصْرِفْ عَنِّي كَيْدَهُنَّ. If you don't steer their scheme away from me, if you don't redirect their scheme away from me, you see, now he's telling Allah to intervene. You see, first he told Allah, I'm going to hold on to you, ma'adallah. That was his part. He's told Allah now, I've done my part, Ya Rab. إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ. I did. Now it's time for what? إِيَّاكَ نَسْتَعِينَ. That's what this is. It's so beautiful. Then he turns to Allah and says, Ya Allah, please just get this away from me. I can't. And he says, if you don't steer their scheme away from me. On a side note, why is it their scheme? The scheme was just one woman. Those women didn't come to scheme. Those women had a different scheme against that woman. Right? They just came to eat some fruit and, you know, chit-chat or whatever. But now they're all in on it, aren't they? So now it's become their scheme. So it was one woman's scheme, but now it's become all of their schemes, and it's kind of a foreshadowing. The man had said, this is the kind of scheming you women do. Your scheming is amazing. Your scheming is great. And now their scheming has become great. Exactly, these women have developed a much greater scheme. So he says, if they're scheming, if you don't take it away from me, أَصْبُ إِلَيْهِنَّ. Listen to these words. Saba in Arabic has to do with being a child. So, you know, كَيْفَ يُكَلِّمُ مَنْ كَانَ فِي الْمَهْدِ صَبِيَّ. So, sabwa and saba, that they have to do with being a child or a baby even. Okay, or a young child. Saba also means mala, to incline. And the idea behind the two connected to each other is children become inclined towards something, like they get inclined towards a chocolate cake, or they get inclined towards a toy, and then you can't get their mind off of it, and they'll throw a fit in the store, and they'll fall on the ground, and you're dragging them, and they're like, Teddy, I'll come back for you. Like, you know, once they get their mind on something, they lose their common sense. It's very hard for children to redirect their attention to something when they lean on something and when they incline towards something. Yeah? So some kids, for example, when they have a favorite toy and that little bunny rabbit or whatever it is getting old, it's got all kinds of bacteria, COVID-19's got nothing on this rabbit, but you want to throw it away, every time you think even about putting it in the washing machine, the child has like a, you know, mini heart attack. So you have to make sure you do that when they're asleep or when they're at grandma's house or something, because they can't deal with it. The idea that children become unreasonable and they let their emotions run them, and it's very hard for you to, you know, their brains haven't developed to the point where you can be logical with them. Yeah? He uses the word, he could have said, you know, مَالَ يَمِيلُ أَمِلْ إِلَيْهِنَّ. If you don't turn their scheme away from me, I might incline towards them. But he used the word that's used for a child, as if to say, Ya Allah, and he has seen life. He's not a sheltered young man. He's seen how men and women are in Egypt. He's been in the marketplace. He knows how these politicians are. This woman, if she's this character, you'd think she was like a righteous person all this time, all these years that he was growing up. He's seen these things, and he's seen the effects on men, and he's seen the effects on women. And he's seen good men turn bad. He's seen men lose their senses over this kind of thing. And he's telling Allah Azza wa Jal, I may be holding on today or tomorrow or a year from now, but I'm not going to say that I'm not human. Ya Allah, you know my weaknesses more than I do. I might turn into one of these. I might just lose control over my senses and just go on impulse and not think about it. Because that's exactly what desires do. Desires make you turn your logical brain off. You don't want to think about tomorrow. You don't want to think about the right and wrong. You just want to do what you want to do. The urges take over. It's like an animal takes over. And the Quran's imagery is like a child inside you takes over. A child that just wants a toy and nothing else takes over. There's no sense of consequence. There's no sense of right and wrong. There's no sense of future. There's no sense of loyalty. All of that disappears in that moment. And then people can make such a mistake and later on say, I wasn't myself. I can't believe I was like that. I can't believe that happened to me. And that, because that is a reality. That can happen. If you put yourself in that situation, that can happen. It can shut you off. It can shut part of your brain off. So, أَصْبُوا إِلَيْهِنَّ. I might become like that. He's admitting this to Allah Azza wa Jal. This is a remarkable thing for a prophet to say. He would never be like that. Not in our belief. But prophets are, you know, ma'asum anil khata. They're innocent. They're dignified human beings. But he is also acknowledging his humanness. And if a prophet has no shame acknowledging his humanness and saying, Ya Allah, get me away from a situation that is going to test my dignity to the point where I may lose my senses and do something bad, then who are we to think that we are immune from that? That if you know that 10 steps down the road, it's going to lead to something bad, why even take step one? And if you refuse to take step one, and a million people come to you and say, why aren't you taking step one? What's wrong with step one? Is step one haram? Step one's not haram. Why are you being so extreme? This is not a conversation between you and people. This is a conversation between you and Allah. Allah says about zina, وَلَا تَقْرَبُوا الزِّنَا. Don't go near it. And what brings you near it, and your friend near it, and some girl near it, or some boy near it, or some married woman near it, or a married man near it, what brings you near it is in your world, you know what brings you near it. That's not one thing for everybody. It's you have to understand in your world what can bring you near it. And Allah is not telling you not to do zina. He's telling you not to go near it, because Allah knows in His wisdom, أَلَا يَعْلَمُ مَنْ خَلَقْ. Doesn't He know who He created? When you take small steps, then 1 inch can turn into a mile before you know it. And when you're taking those steps in those moments, you become a sabi. You're not thinking rational. You're just a kid. You're thinking without reason. And you're taking steps you're not realizing the consequences of, just like kids. And so أَصْبُوا إِلَيْهِنَّ is him admitting the trail, the step-by-step deterioration, the moral decline that happens inside of a person. He doesn't even want that to start. He doesn't even want that process to start when he says أَصْبُوا إِلَيْهِنَّ. And then he says, وَأَكُمْ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ. And if that happens, then I would become from al-jahileen. Al-jahilin, jahil is the opposite of hilm in Arabic. So one, it can be the opposite of someone who has, you know, consideration, right? Hilm is someone, like a mother has hilm, because she's always considerate of the child, thinking of the child's feelings, yeah? So one of the meanings of it is, you're just concerned about your desires, you don't have no consideration for someone else. Now think about it from that point of view for a moment. When someone is inclined towards zina, when someone's inclined towards wrongdoing, they may be doing a sin themselves, but are they not pulling somebody else's akhirah into danger too? They didn't just consider not worrying about their own afterlife. They don't care that that person has to stand in front of Allah also. Right? Even if that person is being ignorant. You're not, you knew, and you blinded yourself to it. You chose to blind you, because that's inconsiderate. That's part of jahl. This is why in the Quran, the inconsiderate are also called jahil. يَحْسَبُهُمُ الْجَاهِلُ أَغْنِيَاءَ مِنَ التَّعَفُّفِ in Surah Al-Baqarah, Allah says that the jahil thinks that the one in need has no need. Meaning you see them in the community, they're losing a lot of weight, they got bags under their eyes, but you just say, hey, Eid Mubarak, and you give them a hug, and they go. And like Allah says, ignorant people don't see that they're in need. But if you were sensitive, you'd say, hey, I noticed that you didn't come in the car, you rode a bike to the masjid. What happened in the car? Or I noticed that you lost a lot of weight. Or I noticed that you're not wearing your normal uniform. You usually come from work in uniform. Did you lose your job? You don't care, because you're jahil. Jahil means inconsiderate. That's one meaning of it. Jahil is the opposite of aqil also. Aqil means someone who thinks, which means jahil means someone who doesn't think. They don't want to think about it. They just want to do without thinking. Aqil also, aqala means to tie. Aqil also means to tie your emotions. Meaning, when someone is thinking clearly, they have to tie up their anger, they have to tie up their resentment, they have to tie up their lust, they have to tie up their, you know, not all of the emotions have to be tied up before you can think in a clear way. Jahil is the opposite, someone who cannot control their emotions. Someone, when they feel something, they just do it. They become impulsive. So jahil actually means impulsive. This is the meaning that you find with Musa alayhi salam. When he got really upset, when they said, when he told them to slaughter, Allah has told you to slaughter a cow, and they said, were you kidding? You're taking us for a joke? أَتَتَّخِذُنَا هُزُوَا? He got so angry. You're gonna tell, I just told you what Allah said, and you're telling me that I'm kidding with you? After you know that I'm a prophet of Allah? Like, it made him so mad. I would imagine he wanted to throw at least one punch. But we know what happens when Musa alayhi salam throws a punch, right? So you know what he says? When he heard that ignorant response, he said, "A'udhu billahi an akuna min al-jahilin." I'm clinging on to Allah that I might become from those that are jahil. Jahil means what? I might not be able to control my temper right now. One left hook, that's all it's going to take, and the Israelites will get straightened out. But I'm not, ya Allah, I don't want to go there. You know, so that's jahil also, someone not able to control their temper. Here, jahil is meaning someone not thinking, someone not considerate, someone and not considerate of the legacy of your father, Ibrahim, Ishaq, that legacy, Yaqub. And on top of all of that, someone not in control over their impulses. This is أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ أَنْ أَكُونَ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ. And here, أَصْبُ إِلَيْهِنَّ وَأَكُمْ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ. The idea that Allah, he turned to Allah and admitted, ya Allah, I'm holding on, but this pull is really strong, and I may be strong today, but I might get weak tomorrow. There's no guarantee for me. The all guarantees only lie with you. But before that could ever happen, could you just take me away from here? So amazing. He's not asking Allah to protect him after he becomes weak. He's asking Allah to protect him before that can even happen. Before, because he can see it coming. He can fear it coming, whether it'll come or not, Allah knows. But he can fear it in himself. He can fear it in himself. You see, others will give you and me benefit of the doubt. But don't give yourself benefit of the doubt. Don't lie to yourself. Don't say, I would never. Don't say, that would never happen to me. Astaghfirullah. No, not me. I fear Allah. I'm a good Muslim. He's pretty good Muslim. I'm pretty sure he's better Muslim than you and me. But he's not delusional about his fragile, you know, his delicate, you know, holding on to iman and how easily that can go away from somebody. What dua do we make in Surah Ali Imran? The most people of the soundest mind, ulul albab, the people of the soundest minds, the purest thought. How do they turn to Allah? What do they ask? رَبَّنَا لَا تُزِغْ قُلُوبَنَا بَعْدَ إِذْ هَدَيْتَنَا. Ya Allah, don't let our hearts deviate after you've guided us. Which means you can have guidance and the heart can still what? Deviate. That's what that dua means. وَهَبْ لَنَا مِنْ لَدُنْكَ رَحْمَةً. And gift us from your special vaults some loving care. Which means that loving care will mean that our hearts will not deviate. That's the biggest gift you can give us, Ya Rab. And that's what he's asking for, really. أَصْبُوا إِلَيْهِنَّ وَأَكُمْ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ. That's his dua to Allah. when people find themselves in these kinds of situations where they have to either obey their impulses, because their impulses are constantly telling them, begging them to be obeyed. Then there's the shaitan lighting fire on those impulses, and then there are people around them in that circle, or that they've created that circle. Maybe that circle is physically a circle, maybe it's a social media circle, maybe it's a chat circle, maybe it's a Snapchat circle or an Instagram circle, whatever circle that is pulling you away. You gotta cut those ropes and say, لا تصرف عني كيدهن. You gotta delete those apps, get out, just get out. If you slipped already, just unslip, it's okay. Just be done with it. Finish it for yourself. Don't allow it anymore. Forget, I'm never gonna allow step 100. Stop allowing step one. Don't give anybody step one. And then turn to, when you're holding on like that, then turn to Allah and say, if you don't turn away from this fitna away from me, then I might become from the jahilin. May Allah Azza wa Jal protect all of us from fitna all around us. No one is immune. No one is safe. If Yusuf alayhi salam feels unsafe, we should definitely feel unsafe. We should constantly ask Allah Azza wa Jal's protection when it comes to this. When it comes to this fitna. And so I'm going to leave you guys with ayah number 33 and whatever I could share with you of it. And inshallah ta'ala tomorrow, I'm going to talk to you about how Allah responded to him. And then we're going to wrap up. I think we can wrap up this scene, at least the scene at the palace or the scene at this governor's mansion by tomorrow inshallah, which will be ayah up to number 35. Barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-Hakim wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikr al-Hakim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Okay, bye.